From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 16th day of September, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And then a senior trader from Louis Dreyfus Commodities will join us to take up the agricultural energy markets. In just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, we'll hear from the state statisticians in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Nebraska, and Minnesota. They'll help us take a complete look at crop conditions in their regions. Don't forget, this is an expanded edition of the Closing Market Report. We'll go an extra half hour today, an hour-long program on most of these radio stations. We'll call it our Harvest Hour. In the second half hour, we'll talk with Mark David about the hypoxia zone and nitrogen in the Midwest. We'll take your phone calls. This is the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on a Tuesday afternoon, futures like this. In the nearby wheat, December contract at $6.90, down 37 cents. March futures at $7.12.37 lower. And the May soft red winter wheat at $7.23.25, down 38 and three quarters from the wheat pit July contract. Traded for the 2009, which is the harvest month, at 733.5, down 38.5 this afternoon. Corn futures, December contract, 532.25, down 29.75. March off 30 cents at 550.25. May down 30 at 562. And July corn at 570.25, down 30. November soybeans, 55 cents lower, $11.24. The settlement price, January at 11.39.25, down 59.5, rather 55.5. And the March futures at 11.53.25, down 55.25. May soybeans at $11.61, finished 55 cents lower. October bean meal futures at $3.20.50, finished 16 bucks lower. October contract in the bean oil at $43.60, down $2.48 for the day. October live cattle at $102.75, a dollar lower. September feeders at $108.90, down 80 cents on the afternoon. And the October lean hog futures settled at $67.47.5. Up 12.5 cents, but December futures were down 45 cents at $66.10. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like on the afternoon. October crude oil at $90.80 a barrel, now down $4.90. That 90.80 is the low for the day. November at $93.60, down $2.09. Ethanol futures trading at $2.14 or 8.7 lower. October natural gas at $7.21.6, down 15.8. And the RBOB gasoline at $2.42 is down 14 cents. Diesel fuel, heating oil, $2.74. 5.1 cents lower, and the propane futures are not trading, but their last trade was at $1.56.5. Gold futures are trading September contract $6.60 now at $776.50, down $6.60 for the day, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average is just about 92 points higher on the afternoon. It stands at 11,011. The U.S. dollar is currently trading at 79.22. That's up 0.79. And the CRB index at 344.53 is down 3.73 on the afternoon. The Goldman Sachs at 592.99 is down 22.39 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. Tonight, Ed Kieser says it'll be clear. Some patchy fog will form overnight. Lows will generally range between 45 and 50. But it'll get warmer in the mid-50s if you're near Chicago. Tomorrow, sunny skies. Highs will range from 75 to 79. No precip expected the rest of this work week, and no significant rainfall is shown on any models until the last couple of days of September. This prolonged period of dry weather, says Ed, will allow floodwaters to recede and ponds and fields to evaporate quickly. After a cool night tonight, lows will mostly be between 45 and 50, with low temperatures next week mostly in the 50s. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. John Hester of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, joins us in the stead of Wayne Nelson, who's away from the office today. Thanks for filling in for us today, John.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Tom.
It was not a good day
for you
to pick, that's for sure.
It was bad. I think it was a little worse than anybody expected. We had corn basically down the limit. We had beans down 55 cents. Wheat was down 37, 8 cents. I would say 90% of it or 80% of it is in connection with this fear of bankruptcy or liquidation of the AGI or AIG insurance company. People just do not know for sure what to think about it. I've watched a little news this afternoon, and the past CEO of AIG is he's trying to retake over the company and run it, or I don't know if it's a hostile takeover, but he's trying to get control of it again. He says he can bring them out of it without liquidating a lot of stuff. And also the Dow and AIG have a commodity index fund together, and I think there was a lot of concern on how much liquidation there might be there, you know, in the grain market. And, interest rates, the Fed did not lower the interest rates. That caused the stock market, initially it dropped about 150 points, and now we're up about 100 points. So, it's all got to do with the world financial and the financial status of the United States right now in these commodity markets. I think there's probably value in these commodity markets, but, you know, they're not interested in it right now. They're interested in, you know, what's going to happen in the world, and that, you know, if everything goes bad in the world, then there's no reason for grain prices to rally.
On the tech side, did the synthetic on the corn trade much lower? I know on a few of those contracts they're down the limit, but I'm wondering how much below that the cents were.
Did you know? 3-4 cents at the most.
That's probably a pretty decent sign then.
That's probably a decent sign. I think a lot's going to have to do with this insurance company is going to make an announcement this evening what they're going to do. They got so much time before. If they would happen to announce that they're going to have to take bankruptcy, then that's probably negative the grain market for another day or so.
All right.
If they find a way to bail themselves out, then, you know, they may be up tonight.
John, we appreciate you taking the time with us this afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
John Hester is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, filling in this afternoon for the away from the office, Wayne Nelson.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. And to stay with us this afternoon for the second half hour of our program, when we'll talk with Mark David from the University of Illinois. He'll help us take up the subject of nitrogen from the Midwest and the hypoxia zone. Speaking of the Midwest, yesterday afternoon, USDA released the latest crop progress and weather reports. Hurricane Ike, it says, moved through the southern areas of the Corn Belt with a band of heavy rain that stretched from eastern Kansas northeastward into the Great Lakes. Temps remain below average to the west of the band of rain, but above normal to the east. USDA now says 96% of the corn acreage has reached the dough stage. That's 4 points behind last year and 2 points behind the five-year average. Progress in all states was within 7 points of normal. 78% of the nation's corn crop has reached the dent stage, 17 points behind last year and 11 points behind the five-year average. It's important to note that in Colorado and Michigan, the crop was reaching the dent stage ahead of the five-year average. 19% of the corn acreage reached maturity, 39 points behind last year, and 25 percentage points behind the five-year rolling average. Corn condition was rated 61% good to excellent. That's unchanged from the previous week. For soybeans, leaf dropping as of the date of the report had occurred on 21% of the soybean acreage, lagging 27 points behind last year and 20 points behind the five-year average. Leaf dropping was occurring behind average in all states except Michigan, where development was 3 points ahead of the average. In Illinois, Minnesota, and Mississippi, the crop was developing more than 30 points behind normal. Crop conditions was rated 57% good to excellent, unchanged for the soybeans from the previous week. And the winter wheat. Heavy rains fell from the low plains of Texas northward through portions of Oklahoma and Kansas. Producers had planted 11% of their winter wheat acreage. That's 1 point behind last year, 5 points behind the five-year rolling average. Cooler than average temperatures over major winter wheat producing areas of the country kept planting activities behind schedule, says USDA. In Montana, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Texas, planting was 10 or more points behind normal, while elsewhere planting was within 7 points of the usual pace. Now, here are statisticians from the top five corn-producing states in the nation with their weekly updates.
This is Greg Tayson, director from USDA's National Ag Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crop and weather report for the week ending September 14, 2008. Heavy rainfall shortened the work week for many Iowa farmers. The precipitation reduced moisture shortages in some areas and produced isolated but significant surpluses in parts of southern and southeastern Iowa. There were 3.8 days suitable for field work in Iowa compared to 5.5 days last year at this time. Corn at or beyond the dough stage advanced to 92%, 2 weeks later than last year and the five-year average. Normally, 99% is at or beyond the dough stage by this date. 71% of the corn has reached the dent stage. Denting progress lags more than 2 weeks behind last year's 95% pace and nearly 2 weeks behind the five-year average of 92%. 11% of the corn is mature in Iowa, compared with last year's 61% and the five-year average of 45%. Corn condition is rated 63% good to excellent, up 2 percentage points from last week. 58% of the soybeans are turning color, 8 days behind last year's 79% pace and 1 week behind the five-year average of 82%. Soybeans dropping leaves advanced to 16%. Compared with 46% last year and 44% normally shedding leaves by this date. The soybean condition is rated at 60% good to excellent, unchanged from last week. This is Greg Tayson, director from USDA's National Ag Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crop and weather report for the week ending September 14, 2008.
This is Brad Schwab reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending September 14th. The remnants of Hurricane Ike were felt across the state this past weekend, with heavy winds and consistent rainfall being prevalent. Rainfall accumulations ranged from over 6 inches in the northeast and western crop reporting districts to just under an inch in the southeastern district. And it's no surprise that the majority of the state's topsoil moisture supply ratings came in as surplus. Temperatures, on the other hand, averaged 3 degrees below normal statewide, with the coolest temperatures being reported in the northwestern crop reporting district at 5 degrees below normal. It appears now that the year will end with the growing degree days trailing the historic average. As of Sunday, we were behind by 172 heat units, or roughly 6%. And before the heavy rains came into the state during the latter part of the week, farmers were able to get some tractor work done, as there were 3.1 days suitable for field work. Now to review this week's crop progress statistics, the corn crop was reported 77% in the dent stage, trailing last year's 98% and the 96% five-year average. 16% was reported in the mature category compared to 81% 1 year ago and 58% for the five-year average. And while this year's crop has a ways to go before harvest can begin in earnest, Last year, 21% of the corn crop had already been harvested by this date, compared with a five-year average of 9%. The soybean crop came in at 41% of the leaves turning yellow, compared with last year's 81% and the 72% five-year average. 7% of the crop was reported shedding leaves, compared with 52% 1 year ago and 39% normally. The soybean crop was rated in 63% good or excellent condition. This has been Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Becky Summer of the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office, with the Crop Weather Report for the week ending September 14, 2008. Nebraska saw another week of cool and damp conditions which slowed crop maturation as well as dry bean and millet harvests in the panhandle. Overall, three-quarters of the corn crop rated good or excellent below last year's crop rating at this time. Nearly all of the corn crop has reached the dough stage and more than two-thirds has dented, which is 5 days behind the average. Over half of the soybeans are turning color with a few fields beginning to drop leaves with crop conditions well below year-ago levels. The alfalfa acreage rates mostly good or excellent and forth cutting is underway. Pasture and range conditions continue to rate mostly good or excellent and are above last year's levels. Producers are continuing to drill winter wheat when conditions allow. This is Becky Summer of the USDA NAS Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending September 14, 2008. Minnesota's small grain harvest is nearly complete as spring wheat crop reached 97% harvested during the past week. Precipitation received across the state increased topsoil moisture supplies and was generally welcomed by farmers. The majority of the soybean crop was in the turning yellow stage of development, while some of the corn has reached the mature stage. Crop development for both corn and soybeans, however, remained behind last year and the average pace. The average temperature for the week was 56.6 degrees, 3 degrees below normal. Statewide, there were on average 5.4 days suitable for fieldwork during the week. As of Sunday, September 14th, 97% of the corn had reached the dough stage compared to 97% for the five-year average. 81% of the corn was in the dent stage compared to 99% last year and 87% for the average. 6% of the corn was mature compared to 61% last year and 31% for the average. 70% of the soybeans were turning yellow compared to 94% last year and 83% for the average. 18% of the soybeans were dropping leaves compared to 71% last year and 49% for the average. As of Friday, September 12th, 62% of the corn and 65% of the soybeans were rated in good or excellent condition. 65% of dry beans, 77% of sunflowers and sugar beets were rated in good or excellent condition. 31% of the pastures were rated in good or excellent condition. That's the weekly crop weather for the week ending September 14, 2008. I'm Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS, Minnesota Field Office.
Hello, this is Greg Matley with Indiana Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, and this is the crop weather report for week ending September 14th. Hurricane Ike was responsible for the rain that fell across many western and central areas of the state. The heaviest rains occurred in north-central areas, with nearly 9 inches being reported, while some eastern counties remained very dry. Only a few isolated corn and soybean fields have been harvested at this time. Harvest of seed corn, corn silage, fruit, vegetable crops, and tobacco continues. Corn condition declined slightly from last week and is rated 55% good to excellent, compared to 47% last year at this time. 97% of the corn acreage is in the dough stage compared with 100% for both last year and the five-year average. 77% of the corn acreage is in the dent stage compared with 93% last year and 89% for the five-year average. 19% of the corn acreage is now mature compared with 54% last year and 42% for the five-year average. 32% of the soybean acreage is shedding leaves compared with 57% last year and 48% for the five-year average. Soybean condition improved slightly from last week and is rated 47% good to excellent, compared with 44% last year at this time. 34% of the tobacco acreage is reported being harvested at this time, compared with 34% last year and 47% for the five-year average. Harvest of hay crop continues as weather permits. Majority activities during the week included preparing equipment for fall harvest, mowing roadsides, baling hay, and taking care of livestock. This is Greg Matler reporting. Thank you and have a good day.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Mike Barwinski, who's a senior trader with Louis Dreyfus Commodities, joins us now to take up the energy markets. Thanks, Mike, for taking time out. I understand you're traveling today.
Yeah, no problem, Todd.
Are you in Kansas City, L.A.? Where are you today?
I'm actually in L.A., just outside of L.A. right now.
Well, it should be interesting there on the other end of the country. How do you view New York and what's been happening with the marketplace?
I mean, it's almost like a general sell-off of everything in general. If you look at what's been going on with the stock market, I think investors are just scared in general. I think a lot of them viewed commodities, crude oil especially, as a safe haven for their money, especially during, when the stock market goes crazy. But I think these last few days have proven when people are afraid of what can happen, they just pull out their money in general. And, you have crude, I'm not sure, was it down almost 10 plus the last 2 days? So, I mean, that's certainly not a fundamental reason for doing that. You just have a lot of investors pulling out their money kind of scared right now.
On the agricultural and bioenergy side, how does that impact prices for Chicago corn and soybeans? And what is your thinking over the next month as we go into the harvest season?
I think it all depends. I think the USDA number that came out and dropped their yield number was pretty surprising to the market. And, they showed that with limit up, I think, not that day, but maybe the day after. I think in the next month, generally you're going to hear more concern maybe about, mold pressure or late harvest. I think the corn is not necessarily the main driving factor that you're going to see. It's going to be the beans. As I'm sure everyone remembers, the rains in Iowa pushed back the bean planting quite a bit. So I think just from hearing farmers talk about that, that's more of a concern for them.
Can you maintain a bullish attitude for the beans despite what's happening in New York?
Yeah, I think so. I think generally the just the fundamentals of it will tell you that it's it needs to have a very good yield this year, and just from what the USDA is producing and what people are generally saying, it's going to need a lot of rain and a lot of good weather.
Mike, we appreciate you. Go on.
All right. No problem, Todd. Good talking to you.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Mike Barwinski is with Louis Dreyfus. He's in Kansas City, joined us by a pretty tough telephone, actually cell phone line there this afternoon, so we let him go. But he joins us each and every Tuesday, once a month, to talk about the energy and agricultural futures markets.
Programming on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at tnol.com.
In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A second lawsuit has now been filed stemming from the John White child molestation case. The attorney for a young girl and her parents claim a list of current and former school employees and administrators in Urbana and Normal failed to protect the girl from White's advances. White is now serving a 60-year sentence for incidents in both school districts. Attorney Ellen Bullock says her client is suing in both Champaign County and federal courts. She claims Normal officials tried to conceal incidents involving White before he left that job for the Urbana schools, and Urbana officials ignored red flags. Governor Rob Blagojevich's office is challenging a judge's order to publicly release federal subpoena records for the governor's office. They took their argument to a special fourth appellate court session inside the University of Illinois College of Law today. The Better Government Association says the governor's office must turn over the subpoenas under the Freedom of Information Act. Attorneys for the governor say they followed a request from the U.S. Attorney's Office in keeping the subpoenas secret. The BGA's attorney argued that the request didn't rise to the level of prohibiting the release. A ruling may come in the next 2 months. Today's appeals court hearing was part of an annual visit to the law school. Life is returning to normal in the Chicago neighborhood hardest hit by weekend flooding. A spokeswoman for the city's Office of Emergency Management and Communication says only 9 people in Albany Park spent the night in an area shelter. Jennifer Martinez says that's down from 40 the night before. The Chicago River overflowed its banks in the Northside community during the record rainfall. Martinez says power has been restored to most of the homes, and she says the city's health department continues to offer tetanus shots to Albany Park residents. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, meanwhile, warns homeowners affected by flooding that scam artists are on the prowl. She says individuals should be wary of contractors who go door to door. Governor Blagojevich says his criticism of the Chicago Transit Authority is justified, despite Mayor Richard Daley's suggestions they're not. Blagojevich says the budget woes at the CTA are due to years of mismanagement, not because senior citizens are taking the bus for free now. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Well, tell me about the weather in the Midwest. It looks like we'll dry out.
Yes, we will. In fact, a large chunk of the country is actually going to be able just to take a nice deep breath weather-wise, as it looks like things, at least for the next week or so, are going to settle down. We don't have to talk about any hurricanes. We don't have to talk, at least for another week, about any strong cold fronts. And after the excessive moisture from the leftovers of Ike, as you mentioned, we are going to get that opportunity to dry out through the rest of this week and into the weekend, if not into the next couple of days of next week, along with some warmer temperatures, which we know we need.
Dry out is fine, but I think what farmers would really like to hear about is evaporation, because if they've got flooded fields and they've got fields that are canopied for soybeans and corns covering those rows, they won't be able to see that there's water in them, but I'm sure there is. Will the evaporation take care of that?
It should. The thing that is hard to do this time of year, and it's just the fact that the days are shorter, the nights are longer, and the evaporative process of the sun isn't as efficient as it was even just a few weeks ago. But we will have lower humidity, which will really help the drying process. The temperatures are going to be warmer as well, but more than anything, Todd, I think lower humidity will help out. So we're going to get help from evaporation as much as we really can for this time of year.
So how long do you think it'll be before farmers in the Midwest can get into the field? I know things are late maturing, so they're not really ready to move just yet, but they will be soon enough. And then you might flip that and talk about wheat country and hard red winter wheat, because they're in the same boat behind, and they've got to get planting soon.
The same for them, really. The trend is going to be drier. The trend will be warmer as well for the next week to 10 days. But it's probably going to be five days or so before things may dry enough out for folks to get back in there.
And tell me about south of the border and south of the equator in particular, and how they're setting up for the planting season for corn and soybeans in Argentina and Brazil.
Well, precipitation has started to pick up, especially Argentina and some of the central and southern growing areas of Brazil. They were a little bit dry, but there might be some rain that may slow down planting a little bit, but the rain is needed. So looks like some things going into the ground will go in the ground also with a little bit of moisture as well.
Don, anything else to add before I let you go for that?
Stayed in the southern hemisphere, a little bit of precipitation in some of the southern and eastern areas of Australia.
Okay, thanks much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. Most of these radio stations will carry the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Mark Report. We'll talk with Mark David from the Natural Resources Environmental Sciences Division of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences in just a moment about the hypoxia zone and nitrogen in the Midwest. For the rest of the radio stations, don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. And you have a very good afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition, an extra half hour of the Closing Market Report from now until Friday, October the 10th. While farmers are in the combine cabs, they're not quite there yet, but once they get there, we'll be going an extra half hour and taking phone calls on different agricultural topics. Today, our guest in studio with us is from the University of Illinois. He's in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences, College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences as well. Name is Mark David. He's here to talk about the hypoxia zone in the Gulf of Mexico, sources of possible reductions in nutrients from the Mississippi River Basin. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Todd. I'm glad to be here.
We'll take phone calls for him in just a few moments, but I'll give those numbers out in just a bit. Mark, why don't you first tell me a little bit about yourself and then about the Science Advisory Board that you participated in from US EPA.
Well, I'm a professor at the university, and I study how nutrients move around, how we add them to agricultural fields, how they move from those fields into streams and rivers, and then what happens to them after that. And so I'm very interested in nitrogen and phosphorus and sort of how we've changed or what's going on with the current cycles of those. Now, the Science Advisory Board was the latest group that was part of US EPA, and it was a team of scientists that were put together to review the state of science, what we know about hypoxia in the Gulf of Mexico, both on the marine side, but also on what's the source of the nutrients and then what could we do about it.
Tell me about your work and how you gather that information.
A lot of the data that we get comes from two sources. A lot comes from agricultural statistics. The Agricultural Statistics Service provides a lot of the nutrient data, the harvest yields, and things that we can use to do the calculations. And then we use a lot of monitoring data from the U.S. Geological Survey. They monitor the rivers, the flow, and what's in and the nutrients that are in them. And those two things are very important to determine where nutrients are coming from and when.
In just a couple of minutes, we'll come back. We'll talk more with you about the work and what the findings were and maybe if there were some recommendations to the Science Advisory Board about the hypoxia zone. And maybe you'll tell us a little bit about just what exactly a hypoxia zone in the Gulf of Mexico is. But now we probably better check in with the folks at the Business Report. And Phil Brunson of Wachovia is on the line, should join us to tell us a little bit more about how Wall Street is ending the afternoon. Tough day in Wall Street, Bill.
Well, the Dow and the NASDAQ have recovered from substantial losses for the second time today and turned higher after a report that the Federal Reserve is considering a loan package to American International Group. AIG is down 88 cents to $3.88, and many other financial stocks gained on the news. Another report released the last few minutes says Barclays PLC has reached an agreement to buy Lehman Brothers assets. The news is taking the spotlight away from the Federal Reserve, which announced no change in interest rates following its regular meeting. The Fed said the downside risk to growth remains, but also said it was concerned about the upside risk to inflation. Many traders were looking for a rate cut to boost market sentiment as turmoil continues in the financial sector. And currently, the Dow is up 136 points at 11,054. Volume is at 1.7 billion shares. And the NASDAQ Composite is up 21 points at 200 even. The 10-year Treasury note is down 22 32nds, currently yielding 3.47%. This has been Phil Brunson with Wachovia Securities in the Mid-Afternoon Report.
Thanks much to Phil. He's with Wachovia Securities, joins us here oftentimes on the Afternoon Magazine. Of course, this edition we'll call the Closing Market Report, Harvest Hour, in studio with us this afternoon, Mark David with NRAS and the College of ACES, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We're going to talk about the hypoxia zone and the nutrient load that may be affecting it that's coming down from the Midwest. Mark, thanks much for being with us. Why don't you broach that subject for us just a bit, and I'll remind our listeners that they can call in and join us if they'd like at 800-222-9455 or 333-9455. That's a 217 area code. So the nutrient load, is there one that comes out of the Midwest that feeds the hypoxia zone?
Yeah, let me first just say what the hypoxic zone is and then how the nutrients lead into it. Basically, nutrients or water and nutrients go down the Mississippi River and enter the Gulf of Mexico. And in the spring, that water, that fresh water, actually puts a cap over part of the Gulf of Mexico. The nutrients then cause algal growth, plant growth to occur. the algae then die and they use up the oxygen, and that leads to what we call a hypoxic zone or low oxygen. And organisms that can swim away or survive, those that can't swim away can be killed. And so that's the problem. And so it's the spring flush of fresh water and the nutrients that are in that. What we reaffirmed and what we came up with in the Science Advisory Board is that, again, it's nitrate that is the primary nutrient that causes the problem, but also that phosphorus was important. And in particular, the spring load of those nutrients, particularly the spring load of nitrate, the April, May, June nitrate that goes down the Mississippi River. The other thing we found is, where does that nitrate come from? It really comes from the tile-drained corn and soybean fields of the upper Midwest. So southwest Minnesota through Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and into Ohio. That is really the source of the nitrate. It's also the source of a large part of the phosphorus as well. And our recommendation and what the conclusion we came to, reduce the hypoxic zone to a reasonable size, would take 45% reductions of both nitrate and phosphorus going down the river.
Well, how do you achieve that kind of reduction in the load? It seems like an awfully large reduction, and I don't know that producers would be
right.
Willing to.
Now, that does not mean a 45% reduction, say, in inputs. It means what ends up going down the river. Again, there's two sources of these nutrients. One is, of course, the agricultural fields. The other is point sources from cities, sewage effluent. We looked at the sewage effluent, particularly for nitrogen. Even if we made that zero, that would only be maybe a 10% reduction. So it really, for nitrate, it comes down to agriculture. We looked at basically, our conclusion was that it would be very hard to do it. We agree. I mean, there's no simple one step. We don't think farmers are applying too much fertilizer. A lot of people thought that the answer was, well, just add the right amount of fertilizer. Well, our conclusion is, for the most part, we are adding pretty much the right amount of fertilizer. So it's not that simple. We came up with a whole series of things. The bottom line is that corn and soybean production is fairly what we call leaky. And nitrate comes out even under the best of management because it rains in the spring often at the wrong time. And with tile drainage, we lose nitrate. So we came up with then a whole series of things that could be done. But the conclusion then is there's just no one silver bullet that's going to make this go away.
Listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation this afternoon, you can. You can dial in at 800-222-9455, or if you're local, 217-333-9455. Those last four numbers on both stand for WILL. That's 800-222-WILL and 217-333-WILL. If you'd like to join the conversation with Mark David this afternoon, you said there were some things that can be done. What
sure.
are they?
Well, clearly, in the long term, if we really wanted to reduce nutrients, our conclusion, and this has been seen in other places as well, is that we need what we would call more complex rotations, adding other crops in. Now, right now, the system is not really built for that. I mean, corn and soybeans are the ones that are the most valuable and produce the greatest value per acre. But if we were to go to more rotations that had other crops in them. And one of the ones that may come up that really would help from a nutrient perspective are the biofuel crops. A lot of the perennial grasses, things like miscanthus and switchgrass, really would help to reduce nutrient loss. But given that we're going to stay in corn and soybeans, we came up with several things. One of the problems we've identified is fall and application. You know, putting nitrate or anhydrous ammonia, other forms on in the fall leads to greater losses than putting it on in the spring.
Can you quantify that between southern Illinois and the northern two-thirds of Illinois? Southern Illinois generally does not put anhydrous ammonia on in the fall.
Right. But they have very low nitrate losses, but it's not because of that. It's because there's very little tile drainage. So southern Illinois, even though it's spring applied, that isn't the reason the rivers down there don't have much nitrate. The reason is there's no tile drainage down there.
We have a phone call this afternoon from Urbana on line one with us. Good afternoon to you.
Hello.
Your question for Mark David?
Yeah, I'm calling about the miscanthus. At DeGrimi Day, they said that it absorbed a lot of water, and I was wondering if we're not going to switch to that as a crop anytime soon, but if that, I don't even know if it's legal, but if you could plant that in CRP acres, just so it would absorb the water and prevent the leaching.
Well, in CRP acres, we don't lose any nitrate. I mean, CRP acres are always a sort of a perennial system, some kind of perennial grass or even trees, and so we don't really lose nutrients there.
But I mean, typically CRP is like along creeks where you'd have the or a lot of CRP is along creeks and stuff where you're having drainage.
Right, but I think his point is that no matter what you put there, it's not going to be harvested, so that your suggestion is that because it takes up so much more water that you would put it there to keep it drier?
Yeah,
I mean, there is – if we had lots of acres of miscanthus around, whether it was along river banks or not, there's no doubt that that would reduce the amount of water going into the rivers. How much and whether that would be meaningful or not, it's hard to say. It wouldn't do much for flood conditions. It would do more at this time of year at low flow, and it might make rivers lower.
Yeah, and I think as you took a look at the miscanthus and other types of things that would be coming along as biofuels, I assume the assumption would be that those would be on the areas that would be less productive because they're perennials, and they would maybe take the place of CRP acres and become productive for a producer.
That's one you could use them in that way, but others are thinking that maybe these would be on some of the better lands as well, because again, it gives us an alternate crop, it makes the landscape a little more variable, and because these are very efficient plants, we would add very little fertilizer, and there's no doubt that the nitrate loss would go down dramatically.
What are the other types of things that your recommendations were coming
out? Well, so we talked already about fall in. The other things are basically doing things either on the field, things like cover crops in the winter, doing things with tile drainage management, water management, putting valves in tiles and shutting them at times has been talked about quite a bit. Putting wetlands at the end of tile lines is another approach. That's an off-site kind of approach. Even things like tile bioreactors, which have been studied in our ag and biological engineering department. So there's a whole range of things from trying to do some things in the field to doing things off the field with essentially doing something with the tile water. For phosphorus, we have a few other things that could be done. Phosphorus, one of the problems is the fertilizer is not often incorporated after it's put on, and incorporating into the soil helps to reduce the losses of it. And the other thing for phosphorus is that a lot of the phosphorus is lost through surface runoff, water moving over the soil and carried with it with sediment. And so then riparian buffer strips work. Now, when I talked about nitrate, riparian buffer strips would do nothing for nitrate, because if you have a tile, then that takes any buffer strip out of the equation. But for phosphorus, they can work quite well.
Mark will come back and speak with you in just about 2 minutes. As a reminder, you're listening to an Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Mark Report. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can dial in over the next 2 minutes at 1-800-222-9455 or at 217-333-9455. Both of those stand for WILL. We're here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, speaking this afternoon with Mark David with NRAS out of the College of ACES.